Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined to you from the LAX Hilton. Just a fair warning. Avery is getting ready to go down for nighttime, and she is in the same room with me. So we don't know how this is going to go. she might sleepwalk through the first half of the show, just like the Lakers did in last night's game. I'm joined, as always, or well, not as always, but as per usual, with Pete. Pete, I didn't get to watch the first half of the game because of the hassle that it was getting to the LA Hilton. I sat down when the Lakers were down by 19 points, ordered a drink, and by the time my drink got to me, they were within 6 points of the Orlando Magic. So what we're going to do in the first segment, Pete, you're going to explain the game to me and break down the game to me. Second segment, I had legitimately planned heading into tonight to go over some of the unsung heroes. So that's going to be segment two. And then in segment three, because we saw Troy Daniels play as well as he did and Quinn Cook have a couple moments in that game, I want to talk about whether the Lakers can do something to get those guys going and get something, a little bit more ROI than they have gotten so far this year. Let's start though with that game. It seemed to me, just based on looking at the box score, that, you know, as they have since he got there, the Lakers played to LeBron's energy level. He didn't really have much energy, and then they all kind of collectively turned it on.
Yeah, it was a really fascinating game. You remember the young core teams when they would have a bad night, like their worst nights, they'd get waxed by 30, 35 points. Mm-hmm. This was this Lakers team version of their version of that. That like, some nights you just don't have it. You don't have the energy level. You don't have the focus. And the Lakers very much played that way. It was just they're so much more talented than those young core teams and so much more experienced that
that's a big one.
They were able to come back. They also have that great chemistry. So I tweeted out in the game, like, it wasn't just that they were down. It was the way that they were down. Orlando, so, like, there were some, like, encouraging parts of this, as weird as that sounds, in a home loss to a really undermanned team. Just that, like, that was very much their lowest version of, like, energy and just having it.
Yeah.
Like, that was near the lowest of what they bring. Then Orlando is really big and athletic, and what was happening was Lakers were turning the ball over. So when you've got these like big and athletic teams getting out to transition, that's when they will hurt you the most.
Yeah,
because that's when their
Aaron Gordon bigness had a dunk contest all onto his own.
right. You get guys like him, and Mo Bamba even was cleaning up on the offensive glass. They're able to produce not with skill, but with a greater degree of athleticism because you're in the open court. You're not forcing them to make the correct pivot, the correct rip through here, the correct screen, all this technique stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They're running and jumping and dunking and having fun. And so the Lakers' sloppiness on the offensive end really much, very much converted into that on that end. Orlando's also their athleticism in the half court. Like Fultz, even though he can't shoot, like I did a piece on him for the Athletic not that long ago. Uh-huh. Just super crafty finisher around the rim. Needs to tighten up his handle a little bit, but he had a triple double and was really good. So just that game.
Wait, an actual triple double or one with like screen assists? And
you know who signs our checks, right?
Love you, David.
We're changing the topic. Moving on.
There go the servers.
That's right. Yeah, it goes to that. You know how in the cartoons, like, yeah, we're experiencing technical difficulties.
Right. Little
intermission music. Yeah, people are going to be listening to this all pissed off. What are you two dumbasses all happy about? They lost to Orlando at home without
to go on vacation.
Fournier.
That's what I'm happy about.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, their like focus level was off. Orlando is uniquely built to like match up with us, because they're one of the few teams that we're not, even with AD out, because Jonathan Isaac is out as well. Yeah. They're not like way bigger and way faster. We're way more skilled than they are. But if we aren't applying that skill, they're going to outrun us and out offensive rebound us and all that. And that showed its face.
Yeah, I thought actually heading into the game, it was funny. Against Dallas, I actually thought the Lakers matched up pretty well with Porzingis out, especially, right? Mm-hmm. With them, just because you still have Dwight and JaVale. They're still going to be, for the most part, the best athletes on the court. And that can go a long way in beating a team like Dallas. Mm-hmm. But if you play a team like Orlando and you are sloppy, and given the fact that they were super sloppy in that Cleveland game, like eventually the basketball gods are going to catch up to you. They are going to get you at some point. If you approach games the way that the Lakers have their last couple, I kind of thought, okay, this is a tough matchup. If the Lakers are sloppy, then they could very easily get run off the court. But even while that they were kind of down, I saw the sentiment was, well, Orlando is still really bad. The Lakers could probably get into this pretty quickly. And lo and behold, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So what, from where you were watching, what was it that got the Lakers back into the game?
They turned it up on the defensive end. That mm-hmm. was where they really, picked up their energy and effort. Both Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels got hot, especially in that second half.
Yeah.
So, like, it was a crazy game of runs where, like, Lakers fought back from that initial lead that you were talking about. But then, again, in the third quarter, Orlando pushed it back to 20. Mm-hmm. And then it was, like, 2 at the end of the third quarter because the Lakers went on a massive run. So the Lakers, like I said, they didn't have it tonight, but they kept trying to, like, muster it up, right? And so they defended better. They were a little cleaner on the offensive end. Some role guys got hot that we're going to talk about later. So, like, they battled and did the best they could. Could have used a little more from Kuz tonight. LeBron was not – and LeBron had some, like – I'm not going to run back in transition to play defense like more than he has this year. Had a lot of those tonight. So it was just like, it was a fascinating game to me because it was a push and pull of like the best and worst of the Lakers, like twice in each category in the same game.
Yeah. That's a fun one. It was funny. I was watching this game here because the hotel room that we're at doesn't have Spectrum. I was going to just come up here and watch it, but I went down and I was sitting there at the bar. I haven't come out to LA much to watch many Lakers games, and it was wild to watch that with a crowd that actually cared about a game on a Wednesday night in LA. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, sidebar point to make there that's one of the things I kind of look for, and are the Lakers actually kind of, quote unquote, back? That was kind of cool to watch.
Yeah, no, the city's really getting behind. Like we've gone out a couple of times, and remember that bar in Koreatown? I forget the name of it, but like there, like people were into it. It wasn't mm-hmm. just us; people were rooting for the game, and that's growing more and more. Unfortunately, it came out with that result, but this game had a ton of highlights in it.
Yeah.
Like for both teams, just wild
plays. And low lights for LeBron.
Indeed.
And KCP. Yeah. I didn't think I would ever see that. Ever.
What do you mean? With LeBron?
The rim, like getting hung on the rim like that. Like I didn't think I would ever in my lifetime see that. That's one of the things I'm going to tell my grandchildren about. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to hit on, this was going to be the plan for the show heading into it, talking about, because we've spent a lot of time recently talking about trade rumors and off the court stuff or whatever, Darren Collison rumors, Kyle Kuzma rumors. I actually want to talk about basketball, and I want to do it in a positive manner, because like trade rumors and free agency rumors inherently is the team isn't good enough. How can we make the team better? Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to now talk about the Lakers in a complimentary fashion, and I'm just glad that the Lakers picked it up in that second half. Otherwise, this segment would have been super real awkward. Yeah. So let's come back to that here in a second. So the three players that we're going to focus on here are going to be Jared Dudley, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Avery Bradley. Now, Pope has obviously garnered quite a bit of praise for how good he's been this year. But I like, given how low the conversation got for him, I feel like we're still kind of working our way back to average for KCP. Mm-hmm. Dudley, I said tonight, I tweeted tonight that he's my spirit animal. He made that save on the sideline. That was, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't exactly Dennis Rodman flying three rows into the baseline.
James Worthy.
Yeah, James Worthy. Or, you know, at one point my dad got to sit courtside and Kobe literally jumped over him to make a save. Dudley didn't exactly do that. But you know what? By his standards, he may as well have. He could have jumped over two of my dad's by his standards.
Soaring through the air majestically.
He was.
Flying out of bounds. Yeah.
He was. And then the third player that we're going to talk about here is Avery Bradley. Let's start with Dudley. I hate the cliche of his impact doesn't show up in the box score. Because technically it does. When a team is as good as the Lakers, they always tend to have a Jared Dudley, right? They mm-hmm. There's always that veteran that everybody kind of points to and says, in practice they get after it. When they get into the game, they know exactly where they have to be. They do everything that we need from that kind of gap type player, and I don't think it's that crazy a statement to say that in terms of players added to the roster this year, I would probably put him like top five in terms of importance.
Yeah, I think he's really important to like the culture of the team. And we think about that a lot in terms of locker room dynamics. But there was a sequence tonight in this game that really, I think, illustrated some of the value that you're talking about, in that there was a play in the third quarter where the ball, like, but Dudley was battling for the ball and it got knocked off of his leg, mm-hmm. and it rolled like right by Dwight, and Dudley yelled at Dwight like, dive. And if Dwight dove to get that, he would have kept it in bounds. I want to just pause real quick of that and say Dwight's effort level was fantastic in that game, mm-hmm. throughout, and he should have probably ended that game instead of JaVale.
JaVale was fucking brutal in those last 2 minutes.
In those last few minutes. He was so good for the rest of the game in the last 2 minutes. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So I don't want to act like Howard did not play hard. In fact, guys needed to help Howard on the boards because he was defensive rebounding against three guys way too often. Yeah, just sandwiched down to rebound and all that. That said, I don't know if Dwight saw the ball went off of Dudley's leg or not, but if Dwight like went after it, he would have been able to save it. And so Dudley, a guy who is only playing right now because Anthony Davis is out of the lineup, mm-hmm. yells, dive. And Dwight gave him like this dirty look. You saw the camera work on that was great. Dwight was like, what the hell? You're talking to me like that? Like, but that type of accountability is why it's the difference between those like, oh, just a 30-point loss when you don't have it. And even some of LeBron's teams and good teams in general. This isn't just a LeBron thing. But teams that don't have the type of culture that Lakers have get blown out.
Yeah.
Like not just like lose, but like we don't have it tonight and we're not really going
to
dig down.
You just saw the Rockets lose to the Portland Trailblazers by like 30 points tonight.
Right. That happens in these games in this part of the year, especially, right? Mm-hmm. It's a long season. We talk about this all the time, but the Lakers did not fold, which was really impressive to me.
Yeah.
And I think a guy like Jared Dudley is really a key part of that dynamic, whether he plays or not.
Yeah, I agree completely. Look, I've never, ever, ever claimed to be anything other than like the definition of mediocre athletically. My high school career was made up of freshman team, sophomore team, JV team, varsity team. Mm-hmm. And my senior year, we happened to have like a really good collection of guys that it just kind of worked. It was supposed to be the stopgap year because the year after us, the class after us was supposed to be this, they were called the Fab Five. They sucked, by the way. They were not very good. But the year we were there, we got to like the quarter or semifinals of CIF. We lost to actually Darren Collison and Zetawanda. And the reason like we got that far, because we weren't that talented, was because like 1 through 15 on that roster, everybody just remained on the same page and practices. We beat the shit out of each other. It was just, it was this constant thing. And that's why, you know, I tweeted out earlier that, that Dudley is kind of my spirit animal. And I really kind of respect his approach to being, to fulfilling the role that he has been asked to fulfill on the Lakers. He's going to get another contract after this year, and it's going to drive Royce, whatever his name is, insane. And he's going to get that role, and he's going to eventually work for an NBA team or work for ESPN or whatever because of the way he approaches his NBA career. Let's move on to KCP. So he had a shot tonight that he shot it and he missed, and I was shocked. I was surprised that he missed it. I never thought we would get here with KCP. That's wild.
I've got a video coming out on his shooting mechanics soon. Did a really deep dive with my brother just on like, how, why is this dude like all of a sudden one of the better three-point shooters in the NBA, to see if we could kind of figure it out. And he's super consistent with his mechanics.
Especially like when he has time.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And that's one of the big differences, by the way, is last year his guarded versus unguarded shots was about 50-50. Now it's about 73-74 unguarded, right? And he's getting a lot of open spot-up attempts as a result of all the gravity and whatnot. He also gets himself open. He's got good spatial awareness. But he goes hard every night, man. He's great in these games, in part because this whole doldrums that we always talk about, and it's a long season, blah, blah, blah. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has played in every single game this year and played in every single game last year, too. He missed 8 games, I think, maybe 7 games, his first year with the Lakers. He's durable and he goes hard every night, and that is a skill. And when you combine that with more opportunities to get the types of shots that he's good at and the work that he's done to make his mechanics so repeatable and consistent, it's really a testament to the kind of guy he is to do all of that through all of the scrutiny and all of people like us jackasses killing him. And it's only fair for when he's played this well for this long to recognize that.
I will. I just want to say that from day one, I have done nothing but support KCP. all right, let's finish this off with Avery Bradley. Now, I was actually kind of surprised that you said his name, to be completely honest. He was a minus 20 in last night's game.
Oh, he wasn't good in this game.
Yeah.
He was crap. And that's the thing about Bradley, and it's true about a lot of our role players, is not every opponent is appropriate for their skill set, right? Like, it's not every game is like some, it's not some referendum on every player every time they step out on the court. Some matchups, especially with role players, are more conducive to some guys than others. Like, we've had plenty of games. I know we're going to talk about Troy Daniels and Quinn Cook in the next segment. Plenty of games where I've been cussing at my TV because, like, hit a freaking shot. That's what you're here to do, right?
Yeah.
You have one job. We're on fire tonight. Right. They were on fire tonight. This was a Cook and Daniels game for whatever reason, right? But those shooters, it's not a coincidence that the same type of player had a really good game against Orlando. And then a guy like, who would be the opposite as a guard of Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels? It's Avery Bradley, right? Like, in terms of what they do well versus what they do poorly.
Yeah, it makes sense that when they thrive, he's going to struggle.
Right, and vice versa, right? Like, if you've got Luka Doncic, hey, we've got this really ball-dominant guy that can get a little bit bothered by ball pressure. Avery Bradley, that's your game right there, and he kicked ass in doing his job there. So Bradley, though, I think has been unsung because I think he's really a big part of the Lakers' identity defensively, right? Like, when he got hurt, remember they talked about the Avery challenge, and it was, can we keep up this defensive intensity while Avery Bradley is out? Now, I think he's a little overrated by the players in terms of what he does defensively. Like, he's a good defender, don't get me wrong. He also just does some other things that are like, he tried hard on that play, but that was just not smart. Like, he reached in for a dumb foul or something like that, right? This is true of every player, right? You got strengths and weaknesses even within your strengths, right? Some certain aspects of defense he does better than others. But all in all, he's a real positive on that defensive end. But more importantly, he galvanizes the mentality of the perimeter defenders. Like, if we think of Anthony Davis as our defensive general, then Avery Bradley's his lieutenant on the perimeter. Yeah. And I just think that that deserves to be acknowledged in some way. Or maybe I'm crazy and just making this is all BS. It's just what I see in terms of how the other players react to him and how he plays on the floor.
I think that thing that you said right there, the way players react to him, like, this is my problem with the analytics movement. I'm going to go full Charles Barkley here.
Yeah, you're spot on. I know where you're going with this, but yes.
Everybody seems to think that, like, in order to be a good defender, you have to have this incredible defensive rating and your defensive RPM, whatever. Like, all those things have to be off the charts for you to be considered this great defensive player. And if you aren't that kind of a defensive player, then, or if you don't have those stats, then you start to get looked at as like, oh, why isn't that player a good? Why isn't that player having that the statistical impact offensively that they should be given the reputation that they have? Mm-hmm. Anybody who has played basketball has seen somebody struggle to get the ball up the court because the guy guarding him is just that kind of a hound dog. And that mm-hmm. brings value. That brings not statistical value. It brings, like, the fact that everybody watches that happen and they say, like, you see it from the sidelines. Everybody's up on their feet because, you know, in high school and college, you get the 5 second call. You don't have that in the NBA, mm-hmm. but in the NBA, you get like somebody who knocks a ball off their knee a couple times here and there. And, you know, that can either usher more momentum or it can turn mm-hmm. momentum and stuff like that. And that's where I think what you're talking about, the way guys respond to the way Bradley approaches defense, that brings non-statistical value that is still valuable, even though that isn't defined statistically.
Very much so. And in terms of those statistics, I think we put too much the pursuit of being able to quantify everything that happens on basketball court is a good one. It's noble, right? Like, it's not right. And like, but you, it's not, but it's like, to me, the difference between baseball and basketball statistically is like the difference between algebra and calculus, right? Like, baseball starts and stops. The action is initiated from the same spot every time to the same place. Right. And after every pitch you reset, there's some, like, there's base stealing and leadoffs and there's some, but in basketball, there's all of these moving parts and you can attack from all sorts of different areas. So I don't think that basketball is unquantifiable. I just think it's way more difficult to quantify it. And statistics are so early in basketball that we treat these numbers, which are a noble pursuit, and we need to keep getting better at quantifying the game, but they're not in their final form yet, mm-hmm. right? So, like, defensive statistics in particular are kind of guessing, right? Yeah. They are not measuring the things that you're supposed to do. In order to quantify basketball defensively, you have to understand the defensive game plan. You have to understand, like, who's blame here or not. Like, so if I close out to my guy and I've got instructions to close out and send a guy to drive baseline, but my big man doesn't rotate over, how do you quantify right. that statistically in a way? Like, we're going to figure out a way to do that, hopefully, in our lifetime,
right? I hope
we don't.
No,
the mystery of it?
Yeah, like, I like the idea that they're, otherwise we're just, like, then you just get to play out the games statistically. I'm not really interested in that.
I think it gives you gives us a better understanding. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the game's decided by numbers, man. It's one number versus this other number, and whichever number's higher, that is the only thing that determines whether or not you win or lose. Mm-hmm. So if it was boxing or ice skating or something where judges have to come in and give a subjective opinion, an informed one, but a subjective opinion on who won this game, I would be more with you. But ultimately, the game comes down to a couple of numbers. Yeah. But we're so early in the statistical revolution, quote unquote, that treating these numbers like they're gospel now, like maybe 10 years
That's
from
a
now,
way to put it, I guess.
Maybe 10 years from now, they'll have more, but you still got to understand basketball and watch the games because those numbers are not quantifying closeouts, rotations, pick and roll defenses, and all that.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk about Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels and whether the Lakers can harness some of what they saw in last night's game. All right, so I need you to help me out with something, Pete. Is Cook and Daniels, the combination, is Cook and Daniels an LA steakhouse Or is Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels the bad guys in like a teen sports
movie? It sounds like they sound kind of buddy cop to me. Cook and Daniels.
Yeah.
Like
go get him, Daniels.
That's right. Like Vogel is the like perpetually frustrated and disappointed lieutenant.
This show is brought to you by Bad Boys for Life.
That's right. Damn it, Cook and Daniels. How many times have I told you?
I like it. All right. So we saw, I think Troy Daniels finished the night as like a plus 23. Quinn Cook finally got out of I think I defined the doghouse that he was in a previous show with. He was in the doghouse's doghouse is where he was previously. He somehow got out of that fourth string of doghouse, played in this one, and you know, obviously played because Alex Caruso got hurt. He's in the concussion protocol.
Rondo's out too.
Rondo's also out. But my question to you, Pete, is like, did you see anything from their successes in last night's game? Like, was that game specific, situation specific, or do you think that is something that can be kind of replicated and harnessed to get more out of these guys? Which, like, to this point in the season, the Lakers haven't gotten much out of either of them.
I think it's more game specific because of opportunity. Mm-hmm. One thing that Vogel has shown is that he really values consistency in his rotation. So when everybody's healthy, the same guys come out right around the same time in every game. And that's helpful because guys know their role. It's a testament to not only the culture of the team, but to the kind of guys that Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels are, that when their number was called, and this has been true in a couple of games, like they've gone out and competed and produced. This is the best that they've done production wise, but they have they're ready. They're ready to come into the game when there are a couple of injuries, but there's just no way for them to crack the rotation right now with, like, I mean, maybe you could do Cook instead of Rondo, but again, politically, I don't think that you can pull that off, right?
Yeah.
Darren Collison comes in here. Yeah, maybe it's a different story, but Quinn Cook usurping Rajon Rondo, I'll believe it when I see it. So it was really nice to get that. It would have been great to get kind of steal a win with Kuzma struggling, with LeBron struggling as a scorer at the very least, to have these two guys kind of like pull one out for us. But I don't think that it's something they could do regularly. Do you think that there's a way to kind of like crack the rotation?
I do and I don't. I see the point that you're making and I agree with it. You know, I really do, because we have seen the effect that politics have had on this team, right? Like, Alex Caruso would be playing 25 minutes a game if not for politics. So that point has to be made. That's the initial, like, basically it's a non-starter. That's the, after that point, there isn't much that can be said. I will say, though, that I think there's value in what those guys bring. And because of that value, it's worth looking into, all right, is there a way that we can sneak these guys in every so often?
Yeah.
Because, the Lakers don't have any floor spacers from the point guard spot.
That's true. And that is a place where they can get, like, one, we've got the trade deadline coming up, and, like, we think of like bigger moves involving Kuzma and things like that, but a lot of times there's certain moves, like the Reggie Bullock thing, right? Like, yes, we traded Sfi, but Sfi was a second round pick that's doing fine. Like, and I love Sfi. Lord knows I love Sfi, but a lot
of
times
you ever hear the song we sang for him?
Yes, I will remember you. You will remember. Will you remember Sfi?
Jen was like, you actually sung like for people to hear you? Like, that was the thing that you... But anyways, continue.
Yes, yeah,
I know where you're going. I know where you're going.
Harmonizing, yeah. This, a shooter that can come off of screens, right? Just somebody who's cheap, and like Terrence Ross is a guy. Like, Orlando's going to make the playoffs most likely in the East, so I don't think that they're going to...
23 wins.
Be looking to trade him, but like Wayne Ellington, Marco Bellinelli, these guys who are like 10th, 11th guys, but they do this one thing that the Lakers don't have a guy that does that. The guy who's closest to that is Troy Daniels, that ability to just knock it down coming off of screens. But even Daniels is more of a spot up guy, and Cook is too. There's nobody that can like come off hot coming off of an off ball screen and let it fly like again, those Wayne Ellington types of guys. Now, is that enough to carve out a role? I just don't think – I think if Daniels could do that, there might be some situational stuff. And even still, we'll see some against zones maybe. That's probably mm-hmm. the best place for Cook, is we're seeing more and more zone defense in the NBA. So Cook and Daniels can maybe find some spots there that I think are more appropriate. But all in all, I just don't see where their minutes come from.
Yeah, that's – it's a mathematic problem. It's just a – and look, I'm biased because like – floor shooting point guard was literally the only reason I was allowed to be on the teams that I played on. For both Troy Daniels and Quinn Cook, there aren't minutes, right? It's going to be one or the other. And I think one of those guys probably gets moved for the kind of player that you were talking about. Now, can one of those guys get, you know, 5 or 7 minutes every third game or so? Because that's still more than they've gotten so far. Like, that's still more than they've received minutes-wise so far this season. And I do think there would be value in having those guys just open up the floor a little bit and every so often make the game a little bit easier on LeBron, not from a creative standpoint, but just from a spatial standpoint. Because, you know, there's something to be said about the how much harder minutes are when you're playing those minutes in a broom closet, right? And I think right. those guys help that in a little bit.
They very much do. I'm curious how Vogel approaches it in the playoffs, because I think there's a lot to be said for that consistency and guys knowing their role in the regular season.
Yeah.
But the playoffs, you're playing one team. Yeah, you're playing one team over and over and over again. So what we were talking about early with Avery Bradley, one of my concerns about the Clippers is that, like, Avery Bradley and JaVale McGee are liabilities against the Clippers. Mm-hmm. They're not liabilities all the time, but if what I was saying earlier about, like, some games fit them and some opponents fit them, but some others don't, that's going to be true in every series. But, like, if we get through, say we meet the Clippers in the conference finals. That's right, Avery.
She's thrilled.
That's right. No, she's right on with this. If we meet them in the conference finals and we've gotten through the first couple of rounds with the current starting lineup, but a couple of those guys don't work against the Clippers, are you just trotting out a new starting lineup in game one? No, you got to lose one or two of those games before the coach goes, oh, I'm going to change this thing that's worked for me all year. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I'm concerned about. I hope Vogel can have some flexibility so that there are, like, the Clippers is an example. If we struggled in the first game when both of them played because both of them were on the court, but if, like, one of those dudes can get some spot minutes, keep them from packing the paint like mm-hmm. they did, that'd be great. So I think to answer, that's my long-winded way of saying I think that in the playoffs there's some situational ability there, but that's about it.
I love that Avery has been saving her rallying cry for the Clippers specifically.
That's right.
She's sitting there biding her time, and then she heard you somehow through my headphones talk about how, you know, if the Lakers meet the Clippers in the conference finals, she's like, I got this!
That's right. It has to be all hands on deck, right? Like, we all have a role to fill. She's filling hers, so I respect that. That's right. Some matchups are better for us role players than others. So, you know, she's stepping up, we're stepping up. When it comes to the Clippers, we all got to man our battle stations.
Exactly. She has the same body type as Dudley. There's no reason she can't play the NBA. On that note, we will go ahead and call this thing quits. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. As always, we have... So I'm just going to warn you guys. I'm traveling tomorrow during the day. We have a few things to attend to when we land out there in Texas where we land. I'm not positive. We're kind of staying in the boonies out there on the outskirts of Austin. So if we have internet, we are going to record a show, I promise. Or I will record a solo show and I'll post that thing. But, you know, if for whatever reason we aren't able to post a show, it's because I'm stuck in the boondocks of Austin and I wasn't able to record. Thank you guys very much for tuning in, though. As always, if you guys have questions, leave them in the form of a 5-star review, and I'll get to those over the weekend. Lakers lose a tough one. They lose by one. Should have been, could have won, probably didn't deserve to win. So, you know, they were bound to lose, drop a game like they did last night. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And let's go, Avery! Woo!